Welcome to this week's Fireside Chat with Jesse. I am joined today by James Kress, founder of the James Kress Company. Thanks for joining me, James.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
It's so hard for me not to call you Mr. Kress. So I just want to stumble over my words and everything. but yeah, so I was looking back. You were episode 99 4 years ago. We did have an Equipment Finance Cares logo on the TV behind us. However, it was the old logo. So, you know, appreciate you coming on here for, I think, episode 287 or 288.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
And we have a new company that you're with. So not to jump too far ahead here, but for those people who haven't had the pleasure of meeting you, do you mind just giving a brief introduction to your career?
Yeah. So James Kress, I think most people know me from working at Stryker. So I worked 18 years at Stryker. It's a medical device company. Put together a captive finance company for them. And best job I ever had. And really proud of what we did there. And then, you know, also last year, I was the chair of the Equipment Leasing and Finance Association. And so that was a great experience working with Lee Lytle, and just, you know, again, proud of what we were able to do as a team there, and the accomplishments on behalf of the industry. And so, and now, like you mentioned, you know, I just started a small company called the James Kress Company, and that's how I'm spending my time now.
Perfect. And, you know, the chairing the ELFA is a job within a job.
Yeah, it was a lot. You know, I don't think I traveled as much or worked as many hours, but you know, we had some big goals for the year, and you know, whether it was, you know, from my advocacy and people were my platform, and really, I think we had some big wins with the Big Beautiful Bill in terms of permanent expensing, depreciation, and some big reforms to Section 1071, and really leaned into the people side of things and the Power of People Summit that we had. And so, yeah, like I said, just very proud of what we were able to accomplish in that short time.
Especially the second year of new leadership of the ELFA too. So
Yeah. I think it was, you know, Lee had been with the organization for 1 year, and so that was really probably a year of discovery, and so kind of challenged her and myself to start putting some wins on the board in the second year, and I feel good about what we did.
Good. And I'm sure between that travel and just the travel that you had to do for Stryker, I'm sure you were looking forward to not being on a plane for a while.
Yeah, it's good. You know, when I kind of stepped away from that, you know, the first thing my wife said was, maybe we should go to Europe, or maybe we should travel here. And I was like, you know, or maybe we should stay home for a bit. And so I've been taking advantage of that this year, but I'm sure we'll get back out there soon enough.
Well, perfect. So I'm just going to get right into it. So, so much for retirement, I guess I should say. Right.
And
I'm glad too, because when you announced it, or when it was announced that you were going to be retiring, I think at the end of last year, whenever that announcement came out, I was like, it's too young to, you know, I got gas in the tank. And yeah.
I'm young, but I got a lot of miles on me. I'll say that.
that's great. So I was very pleasantly, like, happily surprised when you came back, and how quickly you came back. But for those of you who are watching this who haven't heard his story, I'm gonna let him kind of say, as opposed to how this whole thing came together. So
yeah, it's you know, it's a fun story. So I've been with Stryker, you know, when I finished my career there, it was 18 years, but, you know, around 2024, I started having feelings about, you know, retirement. I became a grandfather. So we have a granddaughter now named Julia. And, you know, I just wanted to be more present and you know, home more with my family, and really focus on some of those personal goals. And but being there so long and really starting that company, I felt like the right thing to do was to give them a year's notice. And so, when I did tell them that I was going to step away and retire, I really did think I was just going to, try and play as much golf as you play and just relax. And but during that year that I knew I was leaving, through a lot of prayer and reflection, started thinking about it more. And really, the catalyst for me was John Gordon. And so John was the keynote speaker at the convention. And he and I both spoke and did a little Q&A. And then, backstage, he said, I heard you're retiring. I can't believe it. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, what are you going to do? And I said, I don't know. And but he really challenged me. He said, look, he goes, you sound like a guy who's got more gas in the tank and more to give. And really talked about, if you can impact people, you should. And so, like I said, he challenged me. We exchanged phone numbers. And, I sat home and thought about, like, if I was going to continue to work or do something, what would I do? And I really thought about, like, my best days at work, when I was driving home from the office, like, what was I doing? And, it wasn't sitting in compliance meetings necessarily or trying to figure out next year's budget. It was, leaning into people, right? Coaching, developing, mentoring, just helping people kind of achieve their goals. And really, throughout my career, it's kind of been a theme, right? I just felt like when I do that, their wins become my wins. And so, I thought, well, what if I just did that every day? And focused on that. And so that really is the foundation and basis for the James Crest Company is, whether it be through coaching or leadership development or some advising, it's really about helping others achieve their goals. And I think you've heard me say before, Dominic Libator is a huge friend of mine and he always talks about being in the giving backstage of our careers, and that's what I'm trying to do through this company.
Got it. Thank you. And yeah, interesting story. And could definitely see, I mean, John Gordon, great speaker, great writer.
And to his credit, I mean, he didn't have to do that, and we've stayed connected, and he continues to be a constant source of encouragement and support. And also Tammy, my wife is been great and very supportive of the transition as well. And so I feel blessed to have those people in my life.
Did she put an hours cap on you in regards to, you know?
No, I just think the fear of me being home all the time and not being
That's what
busy, I think it was more, you need to find something to do. And so that'll disrupt her life. But no, but it's been great. We've had a lot more balance and like I said, really enjoying this transition.
Perfect. So the question I have for you is, when you look at the equipment finance industry, in it for several decades, like what do organizations, I guess, where do you think companies need the most help today?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, it's such a dynamic time. There's so much change, but also such an incredible time to be alive and to be in the industry with everything that's happening. For me, the one thing that I see is when I was on the board, I was a part of the group that started the Emerging Talent Advisory Committee, ETAC, and the last 3 years, as the board liaison, and just working with that next generation of leaders is something that I find really energizing. But I do see sort of a growing divide between senior leaders today and this next generation of talent, in the sense that, I think a lot of leaders are still clinging to historical models of leadership, maybe like command and control or others, and I just see like a generation of talent where this doesn't serve them like they need it to. And so I think those folks are looking for purpose-driven work. I think they want to work at a place where they feel like they belong, where leaders actually care for them, invest in them, are going to develop them. And I think my generation, if we weren't getting that, we might hang out longer and wait, that it might get better. But I think these guys will leave and seek it out, And so I do think there's sort of a divide there that we need to close. And that's part of the work that I'm trying to do is help stand in that gap and help both groups figure each other out a little bit better. Yeah.
Perfect. And then I guess, what are you seeing in I was gonna say the short period of time that you've been doing this, but in the period of time that you've started this, what are you kind of seeing in your engagements?
Yeah, I think, like I coach a lot of high potential people, who's senior leaders, are trying to get them ready for their, next role or two. And for them, they just want clarity, right? Help me understand what senior leadership expects of me, in that next role so that I can be successful. And they want to understand the why. Like why are we doing the things that we do? And they're seeking out, like I said, investment. Like they want a company that's going to invest in their development, that's going to help them career path, so they see a path, for themselves in the future. And from leadership, I think, just the demographics, right? Like less workers are available than there used to be, right? And so there's sort of this war for talent that's developing. And I think, you want to be a destination as a company, right? You want people to seek you out because you offer the culture and the opportunities and the purpose-driven work that motivates people every day. And so I think leaders are trying to figure out like how they can deliver that, and also, deliver all the financial objectives that they have as a company. And so, but that seems to be the biggest themes that have been coming out recently is just, I want more clarity, I want more investment, and I want a path.
And are you seeing some of the, I guess, more senior leaders being, I guess, receptive to this feedback? Because let's face it, we have, I mean, this industry, I think since I've been in it now 21 years, is always like, oh, next generation, next generation. But it's been like almost like the same leadership, the same guys who start companies are just selling and then starting over again and over again. And we're seeing more and more of these people, and not necessarily age out, but I think they just had enough.
Yeah.
And then others that are still around, like, are you seeing a more softer side of some of these more, I guess, what we call like rigid, traditional rigid leaders in this space?
Yeah, well, I think you're right. I do think, a lot of leadership is aging out and retiring. And there are more leadership opportunities than there are people to fill them. So I think that's a big deal. But I think a lot of the people are coming in. I mean, there's still those guys out there that aren't looking to change. Their runway is not that long, and so they're just trying to keep it between the rails, right? But I'm excited about a lot of these new CEOs that are coming into the space, and they're willing to challenge the status quo and shake things up a little bit. And I have a lot of confidence. I think we're going to be in good hands. So.
And as you'll, I had to ask a question, and some of those things, especially when you get in, because like we go into like opportunities frequently, and people are like, oh, we need change, we need change, we need to do this, we need to do that. And then you, after you invest a decent amount of time, you give them a playbook, and they're just like, I'm not doing that. Like, I'm not doing that because
Yeah.
change is uncomfortable. I mean, it's uncomfortable. I mean, what you're providing can be considered uncomfortable if someone's not willing to further seek the investment on top of what you're providing.
Yeah, a 1,000,000%. Because I think change management is a skill, right? And driving organizational change. And And you know, one of the gaps I see a lot of times is, you know, new leader comes in, they got a compelling vision of the future, but they don't really honor the past, right? And so they're just like, okay, you know, today, this is today's mandate. And when that happens, you know, people don't buy in and they don't feel appreciated. And so that's what I kind of coach like senior leaders that I work with on is, you know, you have to honor the past. You know, a lot of great work went in to get us to this point, and we need to appreciate that and respect that. And then cast a vision of the future and help people understand like what role they're going to play and like achieving that future state. And so and you have to preach it daily. Like it has to be a part of the vocabulary. Because if people don't believe and they're not committed and they don't understand what their role in that process is, you know, it just doesn't stick. It's not a sustainable change. And ultimately people just kind of revert back to, you know, the old way because it's easy, you know.
That happens not only with people, happens with systems, it happens with everything. You make all this investment in these things for look thinking that you're going to be doing a better job, and then you just don't. But anyway.
Well, and that's the fun part about startups, right? And you know, because they're not tied to legacy systems, they don't have legacy process.
Sure.
You know, everything starting with a blank sheet of paper, and it's really fun. And it's so difficult to like take that mentality and inject it into a company that's been around 20, 50, 100 years.
Yeah, but when you can finally make some progress, it goes a long way.
Yeah, and it's all about leadership, right? I mean, it starts and stops right there.
So when you take a look at the next generation coming up, because we try to have at our EF Cares events, we try to have a younger individual, I guess, represented on a panel because we want their insight. I mean, we've even had
Yeah.
panels where it was just emerging like leaders. And some of the things that they talk about in regards to not what they're looking for in an employer, almost by what an employer needs to have for them to consider working for them. Like I think pet insurance came up one time.
Yeah.
Like, wait, pet
Yeah.
insurance? It was like, you will invest in me to go to these conferences. And I want some training on an annual basis. So I don't know if you're seeing those three, or if there, what other things are you kind of seeing that this next generation that we have that's going to be leading the equipment finance industry are looking for?
Yeah. I mean, what I hear you saying is like I want you to commit to me. Like I want you to invest in me. And so yeah, I think, you know, one, I'll go back to purpose, right? Like I don't think these folks want to just be paper pushers. And, you know, enhancing shareholder value can't be the sole purpose of their work. I mean, they want to do something meaningful in their careers. And so, like, for example, one of the ways we established that at Stryker, you know, our mission was to make healthcare better. So we would start every town hall with a patient story where, you know, a person who was impacted by equipment that was financed through our captive finance company talked about the difference it made in their life on, you know, what might have been the worst day of their life. You know, when they had to have our healthcare equipment involved. And so, you know, and then we would try to connect like what a person does, like, hey, you're not just a documentation person. Like when you create those contracts, you know, you're giving that hospital access to the best medical technology, right? That impacted this person. And I know healthcare is probably an easy one to do that with, but like now that person has purpose, right? About, hey, when I get up every day, like what I'm doing is impacting people beyond, you know, just financing a piece of equipment. So I think people are seeking out purpose, right? And to your point, you know, they want investment. They, you know, I heard a guy talk about how, you know, he paid for, you know, a high potentials MBA. You know, and at the end of the when the kid graduated, he's like, he gave us 2 weeks notice. And he said, well, wait, you know, I invested in your MBA, so you should stay here for 2 more years at least, right? So and the guy said, you know, you don't understand. I stayed here for 2 years because you were paying for my MBA, right? Like it's just a different thought process. And then lastly, right? Like I think, you know, people, they see their role and then they hear the CEO or their leader talk, but they don't understand. Like it's not clear to them, like, okay, what are the steps for me to get to that spot? Like as I'm thinking about my career and the path that I want to go, like help me understand how I get to where you are. And you know, that lack of clarity, you know, it frustrates people. And again, like I think if I'm leading a company today, what I want to do is like create an environment where I want to become a destination within the industry for people to get those things. And say, hey, and then tell their friends, like, it's great to work here. You should come here too. And it's just striking the right balance, right? And just helping people understand the why. But and you know, I've heard the pet insurance thing before. It's a thing, right? But it's just another example of, hey, you care about me, you're investing in me, and because of that, I'm going to give you my best every day. Right.
No, that's perfect. And then, yeah, from a pet insurance perspective, as someone who had to go to an emergency vet yesterday, it's like,
Yeah.
But
Yeah.
however, Consult Disrupt is not going to have pet insurance for foreseeable future. Record, throwing that out there. No, I guess not to spill too much of your secret sauce, but to that point in regards to that leader who invested in a young person's MBA and then they left, I guess what advice would you have for people, because those programs exist, and I'm sure that happens more often. And it's, I'm assuming, because the person doesn't see their final purpose at that company, so it's like they're just there. I mean, what was the was it 70% of the workforce is not engaged on a regular basis? Is that what was in that
Yeah.
article? So it's like, I'm not trying to, I'm spinning around a lot of circles here, but I guess what advice would you have for that leader, you know, the next time they invest in somebody?
Well, and to your point, right? I think Gallup just published a report recently, but you know, it's the first time in a while that employee engagement has gone down year over year, like across the board. So I think leaders and employers just have to ask themselves, like, you know, why is that? Like, what's going on?
Too many reels, they get lost in reels.
yeah, right. And they I just think, like, you know, we have to ask ourselves, you know, why are people not engaged? You know, one of the reasons, you know, I heard recently, you know, a person was saying, hey, look, like I've tried telling my leaders like what needs to be different, but they don't listen or they don't act, right? And so you know, I'm gonna look for another place to work. And you know, so again, I just think it comes down to the culture ultimately, that you know, it's a culture where people feel like they belong. They feel like, you know, they have empathetic leaders that care about them. I think transparency is huge. Like they don't have to agree with everything you do as a company, but they have to understand why you're doing it, you know, and maybe they don't agree with it, but at least they respect it and in that sort of way. You know, I remember I was having a conversation with some young folks a few years ago, and they're saying, hey, like, I need an office to come to and work every day, but only 2 days a week, you know, and then I want to be able to work from home the other days. And I said, well, that's cool. I go, how do you expect me to pay, you know, a lease on 100,000 square foot of property for you to hang out in 2 days a week, right? Like we got to balance those things. But I think having that conversation, right, goes a long way. Towards that. And so again, I just think people are seeking, you know, more transparency, you know, investment, you know, just a culture where I belong. And you know, it gets harder, especially if people are remote all the time. You know, it's harder to do than it used to be, but I think we're just finding new ways to attack that.
And then from a leadership perspective, it's almost like it's hard, right? Because you almost have to, senior leadership needs to put their egos aside when someone comes to them with a, you know, with an idea. I mean, it happened to me in my career where I brought up, some things that I thought that can be improved, and I ended up having a target on my back just because of that. And that's, so it's one of those things where people are like, oh yeah, we'll be an open board, open book, come in, speak freely. But also it's like, okay, what is your ulterior motive behind
Yeah. I mean,
it?
there are a lot of great leaders out there, for sure.
Yeah.
What I would argue is there's just not enough, and that leads to, some
And do you
mavericks
think
or
and do you think that's lack of training, a plug for the James Quest company, or is it just ignorance or just not enough experience? I know it's a
yeah.
tough, I know it's a tough question. I'm sorry. Just more of a
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, one of the motivations for me to start this company is I read a McKinsey report that said something like 77% of workers feel like their boss is their greatest source of stress. I mean, think about that.
That's
If that's true, right, and I have no reason to believe it's not, if that's true, it's not that that stress just happens at work, right? You carry that home, it impacts your family, that impacts communities. I was motivated to say, hey, look, what if 77% of workers said, my biggest champion is my boss, right? Is somebody who cares about me, is investing in me, is helping me achieve my goals, like is driving engagement up at work. Like I understand my purpose, I know what's expected of me. And then like they carry that home, right? And then so I just think there's ripple effects to that. And look, I've experienced it with, I have adult children and others, like, and they tell me what their day at work is like sometimes. And so I just think, like, if we could turn that on its head, right, and say, create better bosses, better leaders that lead to better workplace cultures, I just think that ripples into better homes, better communities, and I'm just trying to do my part
Sure.
to add to that in some small way.
Perfect. Perfect. Sorry. I'd ask just because it's something that was
Yeah.
real to me, because it's always that thing where people are like, oh yeah, it's open door. Come here. No idea is a bad idea. And then it's like, you present something where it's like a, yeah, look at all this information. And then it's like,
Yeah.
why'd you do
Well,
that?
in most companies, right, that do employee engagement surveys,
Yeah.
it has a negative impact, right? Because they ask you to take time out of your day to fill out the engagement survey. You put in there all the things that are wrong or need to be changed with the company, and then they never do anything, right? And so it's like you asked me what I thought, I told you, and you just ignore me. I mean, it just makes it worse, right?
Or
And so.
it's not just internal, but even when you probe your clients, because I have people come to me all the time, they're like, well, what if we do like a customer survey in regards to ways that we can improve our products or services? And I'm like, great idea. Absolutely, we should do that. However, what's your plan to then set a strategy, not only thank the people who responded, but how are we going to respond when you're going to get some answers that you're not going to want to hear?
Yeah.
But it's positive feedback and ways that we can iterate and become a better organization. And like, wait, we have to respond? And I'm like, yeah, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a huge accountability factor there, right? Is like, hey, if you're gonna ask, you should. And I think where you're getting at is it should be a conversation, right? There should always be sort of a back and forth. And again, you'll get some crazy things in the survey that you'll never be able to do, but just explaining that, hey, this is why. And like, I hear you, I understand you, but this is why we can't do that, but maybe we could do this instead, right?
Yeah.
Like that's where, I think, value happens and trust, sort of created amongst the team so that it drives that culture, right? Where, hey, like I know my why. I know why I'm doing what I'm doing here.
No, that's perfect, James. And then, yeah, I mean, to your exact point, that's why you and this role with the organization, I think, is perfect because we need more, not necessarily formalized leadership training, but just people that have been there. They've run organizations, they've dealt with several people underneath them. So I think that's just
Yeah.
a definite need.
Well, I mean, I thought like when I was in college, my favorite professor was a guy who I was an economics major, but he owned his own company for 20 years. He had a successful exit, and then he became an adjunct professor. And he taught two of my classes, but I just remember we would say, okay, this is what the book says, right? Here's the theory. And then this is how it kind of played out in real life. And I just thought like marrying those two things together was just powerful from a teaching perspective. And you know, that's what I hope to bring a little bit to my, you know, leadership development and coaching practice.
Perfect. And I guess there's two more things I want to focus on, if you don't mind.
Yeah,
So
sure.
mentioned earlier in your introduction about giving back to the industry that's provided you I guess pretty much your career to date. Like I guess what does that mean to you?
Yeah, so I think I attended my first ELFA event in 2002. So, you know, I've been in the industry for a while, and like most people, you know, I didn't seek out the equipment finance industry, right? Somebody called me and invited me in. They invited me to join them at an independent leasing company. I was invited to my very first, you know, ELFA event. You know, but somebody brought me along. And throughout my career, you know, I've just been lucky to have people who, you know, saw something in me and you know, they invested in me, they mentor me, they created opportunities for me to have a successful career in the industry that you know, I've been very blessed to have. You know, now at this stage, you know, I just feel like, you know, I'm obligated in a lot of ways to do the same thing for other people. And so, very, you know, most people that I talked to in the industry were invited in by somebody else. And so, you know, I just challenge folks like, now that you're here, like, who are you bringing along? Not just, you know, inviting them into the industry, but investing in their careers, creating opportunities. Like we're all capable of doing that. And I think we made some big strides, you know, as an industry over the last, you know, 10, 15 years in terms of making it more welcoming and inclusive. But you know, again, like somebody brought you in, you know, you should be thinking about who you could bring along with you. So
Perfect. And then I guess advice that you have for someone, young professional, just getting into the industry.
yeah, I think, you know, a couple of things. You know, one, be curious. You know, I think there's a lot of different roles and opportunities, different types of companies to work for. You know, I would seek out, you know, things that are going to stretch you, teach you new things. You know, seek out people that you want to work for that you know, you think you can learn from. You know, the other thing is, you know, how are you building your network? You know, this industry, like a lot of others, is built on relationships, right? And you know, I had a young person ask me, you know, a number of years ago, like, hey, you know, could you give me some advice on applying for jobs and like how to? And I was like, I don't know if I'm the right person for that. And she said, why? And I said, well, you know, I've applied for a job in 25 years. You know, I said, all the jobs I've had are because, you know, I've built such a big network of people that I know that people just call me and say, hey, you know, I have an opportunity. I think you'd be a great fit for it. You want to talk about it? And so, you know, the one thing I wonder about sometimes with a lot of this remote work and not being in the office every day is, you know, how are you building those relationships inside your company? And then certainly thinking about how you build relationships outside your company. And so that's why I think, these networking events, getting involved at an industry level, not just your company level, getting to know people, is such a difference. And getting to know people that can be, difference makers in your career, and seeking them out, and building relationships, right? Not just, I tell my kids sometimes, I say, you got 1,000 Facebook friends, or I should say Instagram friends, that I'm showing my age, but you don't know any of these people, right? Building a network's not like that. It's about building, relationships where people are gonna, I talk about like mentorship, sponsorship, and advocacy. Like, what are people saying about you when you're not in the room, right? And who's saying, hey, have you thought about calling this person for an opportunity? I mean, that's where, that's what I would challenge them with is, and there's so much opportunity. And like I said, there's so much change right now. And it's a great time to be in the industry.
Sure. Yeah, I think one of the concerns, or I guess challenges, that I think younger individuals face when they come in, because traditionally when I interview people, it's like, how'd you get started? They're like, oh, credit collections, and then they kind of just work their way up, but they learn like what is it, how the sausage is made, because that's where you get to meet, like, kind of understand the intricacies of how things work. And with, I hate to use these two letters have not been used this entire thing, but with AI potentially like subsidizing some of those roles, like, is there a little concern there from a knowledge gap perspective that some people just don't understand? Because that's the touch point that these equipment finance companies have with their customers, right? And if
Yeah.
replacing that with technology, to your point, this is a relationship-driven industry. It's not really transactional. So any concerns there, or just thoughts?
Yeah, I think back in the old days, right? We had these,
We say old days, it's like 2000s. It's like, not like.
But I remember when I worked at the bank, right? There was a 4-year training program. And in that 4-year program, you would work in credit, you'd work in collections, so you'd have to understand, what happens when you make these credit decisions, right? And you would rotate through sales or, different areas of the thing, but you would have like a solid understanding of how the company worked. A lot of those have gone by the wayside because people don't want to invest in that. That's one thing gets me really excited about, this affiliation between the ELFA and CLFP is really just trying to, provide people with that education, right, around how all parts of the business works. But I had a mentor tell me early on, you always want to be as close as possible to the revenue and understanding how sales and marketing work, right? Because if you don't have that, like the rest doesn't matter as much. And so, and that's what I mean by be curious is, stretch yourself and get into some roles that might be a little different than what you're used to. Somebody brought up AI to me recently, and they said, you have a lot of people aging out of the industry, and then you have a lot of jobs that are going to be potentially impacted by AI and just this concept of, knowledge transfer. And I do think, AI is going to be a good support, to make people more efficient at their roles. And I think it'll help with some of the technical knowledge transfer. But, again, leadership, you can't use AI to develop, to replace leadership. And I do think that's where, there's a gap for people to, because I just see people saying, hey, we're going to stretch you, put you in this stretch role, and, hopefully you figure it out, right? And the people don't have the support they need, and they're sort of flailing away. And then some of those stories end badly for the person, right? It's not really a stretch assignment, that develops them the right way. And so I just think, As we think about that future of work and how we leverage technology to make people more efficient, I mean, we're going to expect more people because they got more tools at their disposal. But, at the same time, there still has to be an emphasis on developing people as, great managers, great leaders, being able to motivate and inspire, folks around them.
Sure. No. Well said. Well said. And that was the quickest AI discussion anyone will ever have. So
Yeah,
perfect.
well,
We can go on forever. We can go on forever for that one. But
I just call RJ if I need any
yeah, exactly. No. I mean, yes, for RJ. But like I said,
help.
the conversation would not end right now. But
Yeah.
I have two more questions for you. I'm gonna switch up
Sure.
clothes just a little bit, if you don't mind. So why should someone pick up the phone and call you for leadership training?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, well, like I said earlier, I think I've got a demonstrated track record of, how to be successful in the business. So I've sort of been there and done that. Two, I've got a career built around leadership, whether it's, in the companies that I've helped build or, in the just through volunteer organizations like ELFA, kind of, been selected to lead there. But, most of all, I think if you just ask people that have worked with me over the years, I'm very proud of the business that we built at Stryker, but the thing I'm most proud of is the culture that we built, where people did feel like they belonged. We all worked really hard together to achieve some great things and celebrated together. And I just think, that group of experiences has prepared me to continue to do what I do best, which is just invest and coach and develop, others.
Perfect. And well said. And my last question I have for you is, if we looking back a few years from now, like, what do you want individuals in the equipment finance industry to say about the James Crest company and the impact that you've made?
Yeah, I again, it's I think, my clients' wins are my wins. I think, working with me, my hope is that I can accelerate, leadership development for some of these folks. But, my biggest thing is, I just want to create better leaders. That leads to better workplaces, that leads to higher engagement with people on the team, so that people will say, 77% of my boss is my 77% of people will say my boss is my biggest champion, not my biggest source of stress. I mean, that would be my goal, right? Is to have that sort of impact.
Perfect. And then if you're your own boss, are you creating 77% of your own stress?
Yeah, it's funny. Tammy said to me, she goes, some days I feel like you're working harder now than you were before. I told her, I said, it's probably true, but what I would say is that, I'm just so energized by the work that I'm doing. I mean, the clients that I'm working with, and they're just fun to be around, and they're so motivated and talented so I just get excited for them for what's next. And yeah, but it energizes me and I'm very optimistic about the future of the industry and about these folks coming up. I mean, I think it's going to be exciting and I'm just glad to be a small part of it.
Well, it's purpose-driven work too.
Yeah.
And like I tell people, like, consulting is what it is, but it's the hardest I ever worked. Like, I almost missed the sales days where you just had a quota and you just had to go do that, right?
Yeah.
But what you can do as an owner of your own company or a consultant is, if the companies don't believe in your values, you can just go like this
Yeah.
and
Yeah.
get out.
Yeah. Well, and I told Tammy, I the thing that's important to me now is, I want to measure success in impact in the number of people, you know, that I've been able to work with in a positive way, and instead of just, you know, revenue every quarter. And she was quick to say, well, there's going to be some revenue, right? And so hopefully so. But yeah, it's just, and I would tell you, you know, I think one, you never stop learning. I'm learning new things every day doing this.
Sure.
Two, it's really opened me up to a new community of people that, you know, I wasn't hanging out with as often before. And you know, it's just again, it's the most fun I've had, and it's still early, but yeah, you know, I'm gonna keep doing it.
Well, congratulations, James. I really appreciate your time today, sir. Excited for, what you're building and the impact that you're going to make in this year and in the years to come. So,
Yeah, no, I appreciate you having me on, and it's always good to reconnect with you, and look forward to getting out on the golf course with you sometime soon.
absolutely. I'm sure we'll have to figure out a way to make that happen sooner than later. But
You got
thanks,
it.
James. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.